It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the French. So we're continuing with France. And basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, Massimo.
Wow. They are enjoying this weather, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
That's fantastic. It's, what, upper 80s? The snow has melted from this winter, and
the skies are blue.
The skies are blue. Are they actually blue? Because I've never seen them blue in Florida.
Yeah. Well,
it's like that milky, cloudy, white skunk.
Yeah, sort of a hazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Blue. I'm so used to the haze, I just, you know.
That's a Florida blue.
That's right, yeah. That's
hazy, smoggy, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's this little haze of the mist from the ocean or whatever. I don't know
what it is. Great. I'm going to bug out of here and get our first guest. You want to talk? And I'll be right back.
There's a couple things I'm going to talk about first. Well, Mike's flying out and getting our first guest on. We got a couple of real good guests tonight, so we're really looking forward to this. But I do want to talk about something ripped from the headlines just today. We are on Pennsylvania, and I have something to tell you about Pennsylvania. This is, it was passed today, a bill that would allow Pennsylvanians to have domestic wine shipped directly to their homes. Won the state Senate's unanimous approval Wednesday, but it has to go to the House now. And the House is not real thrilled. Senators approved the measure 48-0 with no debate, really. I mean, just a couple of words were spoken, that was it, and they passed it. But a spokesman for the House Republican majority said its fate in the chamber would probably be tied to legislation to privatize liquor and wine sale in the state, a proposal that has been bottlenecked in the House since December. So it might not be something that's going to be real good to hang on to for a while, your hopes and dreams. There is a question that the sales of wine and spirits in Pennsylvania need to be modernized, and the way to do that is through privatization, said a spokesman named Steve Mishkin. The Senate bill would allow adult Pennsylvanians to order on the Internet or by mail or by phone as many as 18 liters of wine or 24 bottles per person per month from wineries in the United States. Under the bill, consumers would have to verify their age and sign for the shipment. Wineries would have to collect all Pennsylvania taxes prior to shipping, pay a $100 state registration fee, and annually report to the board and the legislature how much wine they shipped and to whom. A co-sponsor of the bill, Senator Lawrence Farnes Jr., said he was disappointed by the approval of the late surfacing. Oops, I just got a flicker there on my computer and I lost my page. And there it went again. What's going on here? Well, okay, here we go. Approval of the late surfacing amendment that limited sales to domestic wines and excluded those from overseas. The amendment shuts out Pennsylvania wine lovers from 90% of the world's wines, he said. Pennsylvania's already can special order wines to the state-run liquor stores, but they typically must pick up the shipment at the state store. In November, the Liquor Board began offering home delivery, but only for customers who picked from a limited number of products and placed their order on the PLCB website. The option also carries a shipping charge of at least $14 per order, said the spokesman. So, if it passes the House in Pennsylvania, then you guys may be well on your way to having direct shipment from wineries around the country. That is, if everybody wants to start doing all the paperwork and everything that they're requiring. But something interesting, something new, we'll see what happens with that. We don't know yet. What we do have is a guest, Salvatore, from Kalari Vineyards, and maybe he has a thought on this about shipping or two, but we'll get Salvatore on now. And hello, Salvatore, are you there?
Yeah, hey, Ron, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Did you hear me talking about the new law?
I did. I don't know much about it yet. I'm not sure what to say about it. I'm not sure if it's good for the wine industry or bad for us.
The House needs to pass it though, so you know it may be something you don't have to worry about for years.
Yeah, right. That's usually what happens. Yeah.
Okay.
I wish we would just have one national policy about shipping, then it would be, you know, so much easier, but that's not going to happen, but, you know, it would be so nice to have that.
You're right, that is not going to happen. throwing it back to the states and stay here, take care of it.
Yeah.
Well, Salvatore, tell us about Kalari. Is it pronounced Kalari?
Yeah, you got it, yep. Well, we're here right in SmackDown in the middle of Hershey, PA, you know, the chocolate capital of the world, I guess. And we have our vineyard has about 25 acres, although we only have about, I'd say maybe 5 acres of grapes at this point. As you know, Ron, just growing grapes is hard work, and it's just, it's just a lot easier to buy them sometimes. But it's fun. It gets me outside, and I used to be a college professor. Now I'm outdoors and in the sun quite a bit.
Uh-huh. So you have what I noticed on your website, and I pull it up. In fact, let me pull it up again here. You have Zinfandel and Barbera.
Yeah.
And Zinfandel, why is it growing? Are you having problems with it?
No, not to be honest with you. I mean, I kind of planted it kind of as a joke in some ways because I grew up with Zinfandel. I was born in Italy, and I think the history is that Italians took their Zinfandel grapes to California, you know, and other parts of the U.S. and the world, I guess. So I grew up with the grape. We used to buy California Zin when I was a kid. My father made wine.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, just liked it a lot. And then when I started my vineyard, I said, well, you know, what the heck, let me try it. And it's kind of surprising. It's it actually here in the Hershey, I actually pick it relatively early. I pick it around the same time as I do, or actually sometimes even before my Merlot.
Wow.
It ripens pretty quick, which I was really surprised. Obviously if we get a really, really cold winter like we did, you know, back in 94, it'll probably, I planted a grape after 90. I planted them in the year 2000. So if we get a really, really cold winter, I'm afraid it'll probably kill them off. But, you know, it's just the game we have to play.
Right.
But the wine is good. It has a little bit of acid. You know, our soil here, at least down where we are, has the acid levels kind of high. We have a mostly clay kind of soil. But I've actually been pleasantly surprised about how well it's doing. And it seems to ripen fairly well. The wine is good. I use it mostly for blending. I don't really make a varietal of it here in PA, but I use it for blending, and it works out pretty nice.
Wow, that's impressive that you're getting the thing to grow there. And I'm surprised that the winters haven't killed it yet. It's rather
not yet. I mean, there's I do get a lot of winter damage, as you might expect,
right?
With the Zin, but yeah, it hasn't really killed it. And And when it does kind of kill it off a bit, it seems to come back, you know. So above the graft.
Yeah.
Anyway, so far it seems to be surviving. So it's kind of a pleasantly surprised with it at this point. And I just like Zen a lot in that this way.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, always
hard not to like Zen.
You're right. Always one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites, which I've had for years, is the Barbera. You actually do a Barbera?
I do. You know, that's another interesting grape. And I probably wouldn't recommend for a new grower to plant Zen, only because, you know, it might only last 10, 15 years, and before it eventually gets wiped out. But the Barbera actually does pretty well. And the nice thing about the Barbera is that you can let it hang. I mean, I can let that hang forever, and it doesn't really seem to rot or, even the birds don't even seem to bother it. Well, of course, I net everything, but yeah, it seems to do pretty well here. And it matures fairly early, and then you can let it hang for a long time. And it makes a nice, I use it mostly for blending because I don't have enough for varietal, but it's a great blender. A little bit high, in acid, but very nice blender. So,
yeah, I've been a Barbera fan since California years and years ago. I fell in love with it there.
Yeah.
And California used to make a lot of it, and they've cut
back. I think it's because of the Italian influence. Again, going back when I made wine with my dad, we basically used to buy Zin, and then we'd blend it with Elegante, Barbera, those kind of grapes. It was basically it was kind of a Zin blend as opposed to a varietal. But so I don't know if people are just not buying it anymore, because you're right, it used to be all over the place, and now it's kind of hard to find anymore.
And I'm really sad about that, because I love it. I just Barbera is really one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a very there are a few other wineries in Pennsylvania that do make that particular Zin. I'm not sure. I think it may be one of the few people who grow the Zin, but I think there's maybe a half dozen wineries in Pennsylvania that grow Barbera. So that may have more of a may have more of a life here in PA than Zin will probably have.
Yeah. While we're on your grapes you grow, Sangiovese, Chambord, Chancellor, Vidal Blanc, Chardonnay, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and Cabernet Sauvignon. You have a lot of grapes.
We have a lot of grape varieties, yeah. If I had it, when I first started the vineyard, I wasn't quite sure what would be, best to grow here. It was kind of like an experiment more. That's why I have so many different varieties. And probably if I had to do it over again, I probably would get rid of some, maybe half of them. the Sangiovese, I mean, I try to grow that. It's a problem grape. I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nice grape. I mean, it's like the partner for Chianti, as you probably know.
Right.
Ron. And so it makes, it's a good blender, but it's just hard to grow. It's got a very thin skin. Like last year, I don't know in Florida how it was, but last year in PA it was a total disaster with our season. It was just rainy. We got 35 inches of rain in the fall or some crazy thing. So I couldn't even pick the Sangiovese. It just rotted away.
Wow.
It doesn't do well with a lot of rain, especially in the fall. That's probably one I would grow again or plant again if I had the chance. The Cap Sauvignon is. It depends on the year. Last year was a bad year, again, because of the weather. Now, in 2010, it actually did pretty well. So the Cap Sauv and, the later ripening varieties, they're kind of a gamble, too, in PA, because some years you're going to do really well. Some years you're not. You're just probably going to have to just, either not pick them or blend them, use them for blending, basically. The other one's another, the Vidal Blanc, that's a great grape. It's a nice white grape, and it makes a great wine. It's a hybrid, but it does really nice. It's got the kind of a substitute for Chardonnay. You can use it for blending. I use it for blending. I make it as a varietal. That's a grape that maybe I'd probably plant more of if I had the chance, because that it does very well. It's got it's pretty resistant to most of the pests we have here in PA, which are a lot because of our climate, bugs and so on. But it does relatively well.
You mentioned, well, we talked about Cab, Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Merlot, Chardonnays. Yeah. All these grapes are not real cold hardy. You mentioned quickly about the weather there, but what is your winter lows and your summer highs and all that stuff?
I don't know whether it's global warming, whatever you want to call it these days, Ron. Over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years, we really haven't had any really, really severe winters like we used to get, you know, back in the 70s and 80s.
No.
So if that continues, I think we'll be okay. Like that, temperatures below zero, kind of rare. I can't even remember the last time we went below zero.
Oh, really?
Over the last 5 or 10 years.
Wow.
So if it continues like that, now, you know, supposedly the vinifera in general, with temperatures below 10 degrees, you might run into problems,
right?
Which is probably true. But like I said, we haven't really had those really low temperatures. Now, the summers get hot, but not I would say probably mostly in the 90s. It really gets over 100 here. The big problem here, really, to be honest, is the rain. If we have a relatively normal summer and a normal fall, then I think grape growing is very doable here. But a year like last year, then, you know, again, you're going to have to probably throw half your grapes away or not pick them or do a lot of blending, which I do anyway, so luckily, because I like to blend.
Yeah, me too. But what is your weather influence then? I mean, is it Lake Erie? Is it the Atlantic?
We're in South Central PA, so basically our climate is kind of like more like as opposed to the northern part of PA, which gets pretty cold. Our climate is more, you know, like Virginia, Maryland, that kind of a climate. Northern Virginia kind of climate. So we can grow a lot of different things here. Now, as you get north, then you're talking mostly hybrids and natives and, you know, very few vinifera type grapes up there. Although the north do pretty well with like Riesling and Chardonnay. They can grow those fairly well, but the reds they have problems with.
So you're influenced a lot by Chesapeake Bay, then, it seems.
Yes, Chesapeake Bay. Yep, we get those winds from the south, which are nice. We're in the valley here, so you know, we don't. The nights are not really really super cold, and we get some temperature from the east coast, from the Atlantic Ocean, at times. So. It's not too bad. Again, the thing that the kills us are the hurricanes, the tornadoes every so often, and a lot of rain like last year, which really killed everyone. Now, the thing with Pennsylvania, we're so big that you know, there's probably four different types of climates in PA, because the Northwest around Lake Erie, where they grow a lot of the natives up there, you know, Concord and that kind of stuff. Their growing season last year was actually pretty good, and so they didn't have the problems that we face here in the east.
Oh.
So it's just like almost four different countries here.
Yeah,
we're
noticing that. We've been talking to different wineries around Pennsylvania, and it's just amazing the microclimates is.
Yeah,
like you
say,
you can divide the country or the state up into four distinct regions, and the influence is really noticeable.
Yeah, and then depending on where you are, it's really going to determine what kind of grapes you're going to grow. Like I said, up north, you're not going to grow a whole lot of vinifera. It's primarily going to be natives and hybrids. But down south here, we're fairly good, especially Merlot. I think Merlot might be one of the best varieties. You know, at some point, I think Merlot may be a much more dominant grape down here in the south because it grows well. Our soil tends to be mostly clay, very clayish. And I think Merlot likes clay, unlike Cab Sauvignon. I think it likes more of a rocky gravel
right,
soil.
Yeah.
But Merlot does pretty well here, so I think that's going to have a nice history. But I don't know. The other red vinifera may be a challenge for us, you know. But we're trying. I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying and, you know, doing your best to get more variety.
It was amazing, the variety. So your clay soil, actually, that probably is one of your problems because you're not getting a good absorption into ground from these rains, and it's just holding the water right there.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ron. It's just it holds the water in, and then it kind of produces more rot and fungus and everything else. Like I have to spray every week. I mean, I can't
Whoa.
Let a week go. Yeah, I mean, I can't let a week go by without spraying. If I did, and even last year when I sprayed every week, and it was still a disaster. So you can imagine
if
you don't spray. I mean, insects are not too bad, but it's the fungus that'll kill you. Kill the grapes.
And then the birds and the other animals.
Yeah.
The fungus is. I mean, we live in Florida. I can tell you about funguses. You know.
Yeah.
What do you you use stainless steel or oak or plastic or what do you use?
We use mainly stainless steel. I do have some barrels that we use Pennsylvania oak barrel, which actually are pretty nice. I've got a few French oaks, but not too many because they're so damn expensive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I like French oak barrels, but you know who can afford them?
Exactly.
Mainly stainless steel. Even for my whites, I don't really oak any of my whites. I kind of like the natural kind of tapes that whites give without the oak. I think a lot of the California Chardonnays and so on are just over oaked, at least for my taste.
I make an un-oaked Chardonnay, and I tell people California Chardonnay is like chewing on a tree branch. It's just
I know. In fact, I've had people come over to our winery and they said they've never. Because they usually say, "Well, we don't like Chardonnay. It's too oaky." And I say, "Well, just try mine because I don't oak it." And they try it. It's like the first time they've ever tried a Chardonnay because it tastes so much different.
Yeah, you can actually taste the grape. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love a nice oak malolactic fermentation, nice buttery oaky Chardonnay. I enjoy those, but not as a continuous diet.
I totally agree. I think that that's really I think what the strong point of our Pennsylvania wine is because as we said there, the climates are so different that you kind of have like diversity is the name of our game. Everyone makes their wine different. Everyone makes, different kinds of fruit wines or blended wines, and I think that's what our strong point is. And people have talked about in our Pennsylvania Wine Association whether we should have like a state grape, like Chamberson or something like that. And I always argued against it because I think our strong point is going to be diversity and blending and different grapes, different fruits, and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, save the state grapes for other people who want to try that kind of thing.
What time of year do you get your bud break?
Well, I'm afraid this year is going to be really early. I think usually it's actually around the end of April to maybe sometimes even the beginning of May. But I think this year it's going to be, I'm guessing it's going to be two or three weeks early.
Wow.
And we had a frost the other night, so that wasn't good. Well, no damage. I went out, the next morning and checked, and everything seemed to be fine. They're still relatively dormant, so we should be okay. Now, if they bud, of course, and then we get another frost, that'll be a problem. That's why I'm worried about having an early bud break this year.
And as warm as it's been all across the country, it's a concern I'm finding from lots of wineries. It's been so warm.
Yep.
And we're not done with frost. I mean, it's...
No. I mean, it could happen any time. The good news is it looks like supposedly the weather is supposed to cool down here, at least here in where we are for the next few weeks, so that might slow things down a bit. And so, bud break might occur. I'm still thinking it might occur around the mid-April, which is still going to be a little bit early, but it won't be disastrous because at that point, frosts are relatively rare anyway.
Oh, well, that's good. I didn't ask you this, Ben. How long have you been open there?
Well, I planted my winery, my vineyard's about 10 years ago, but the winery is about 5 years old.
Oh.
Gave the grapes about 5 years to grow before I picked them.
Yeah, it takes that long, yeah.
Yeah.
Run it, you and your wife, or who's?
Basically my family and, I have a couple of part-time people helping out and... We have two tasting rooms, but that's a bit of it.
I lost him. If you can, Mike, you there?
Yeah, all of a sudden he cut out.
Yeah, he's still showing that he's on the line here, but he's gone. He just stopped right in the middle. You want to pull him over to the green room and see if
let me see if I can get him on there.
All right. I don't know what happened here, but right in the middle of it, we had ourselves a technical difficulty there. And maybe he's back now. Are you back with us?
Yeah, sorry about that, Ron.
I was just concerned. All of a sudden you were talking and you disappeared, and I panicked. And so
that's okay.
Are you in an ABA there?
No, not yet. I think they're talking about it. But I think, again, the problem would be I'm not sure how they would get the boundaries. I think it would be kind of hard to do that. But there has been some talk about it, but nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, nothing. So unless they, I think a few years back, they were talking about making the Lancaster area. But I don't know whether that ever went through yet. My guess is it hasn't. I haven't really heard that it has yet.
No, the paperwork I have on AVA doesn't say anything about Lancaster, so.
Yeah, but that's about. I don't know whether what the advantage. There's, I guess, there's some advantages. I'm not. I kind of have mixed feelings about it myself. But at this point, we don't really have any.
If it's small and unique, I'm all for it. But when you start getting AVAs like the Mississippi AVA, which runs from Minnesota down to New Orleans,
I don't know what that tells you. I mean,
really,
basically nothing.
Yeah, basically nothing. If you can find yourself a little small one there that shows the uniqueness of your area, then that'd be cool. And
Well, Pennsylvania is still, kind of an infant in terms of the wine industry. Like every other state in the country, it got pretty much wiped out by Prohibition, and then it took another 50 years for it to kind of get off the ground again. And so they're basically most of the wineries here are only 30, 40 years old. So we're still kind of in our infancy again, or second infancy, whatever you want to call it. So I don't know how, it's going to take a while, I think, before things get organized again. And we're still kind of experimenting, trying to see what grapes grow best and, what kind of wines we want to make. And like I said, I think diversity is probably going to be the key to our success because, I'm not sure what we can specialize in that hasn't already been done somewhere else in some, a lot of ways better than perhaps we can do it, like Pinot Noir and that kind of stuff. I don't think we're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, but that's a good point, though. You probably couldn't grow the grapes. They're so temperamental. And why would you want to? Why would you want to spend the time and effort to try to come out with something then people go, oh, well, it's not as good as. You're doing other grapes there that are just sounds phenomenal. Stay with those.
Yeah, and I think we're doing things that even California doesn't do. I mean, you can't get I don't know how it is down where you are, Ron, but in PA, if you talk to most of the winemakers and you ask them what sells most, they're going to say sweet wines. I mean,
no, would they say that the whole country?
Yeah, it's true.
That's true.
And so in California, it's probably going to. My guess, I had some. My friends went out there visiting and said it's hard to get a sweet wine out there because they don't do it. I mean, probably because it's, they can't sell it for $30, $40 a bottle like everything else they do out there.
Good point.
So they just don't make it. And so, there's nothing wrong with sweet wines. We that's what keeps us our business going and growing.
Yeah.
And we do it well, and, there's nothing wrong with it.
I just read a statistic couple of days ago. Yesterday the Moscato grape has now moved up to second place, or up to third place in white wines.
Is that right?
Chardonnay number one, Pinot Grigio number two, and now Moscato number three took over number three from Sauvignon Blanc. So
really, that's hard to believe.
And
that's another grape that we used to. My dad and I would make way back, years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And again, it came from California. It's a nice grape.
It is, and it's very versatile, too. You can get, there's so much in the family of the Moscato grape. Are you on a wine trail there?
Yes, we are. We're on the, it's called the Mason-Dixon Wine Trail, and it actually is, since we're kind of south, southern, central PA, it has, I think, 10 wineries in Pennsylvania and two or three in Maryland. And it's very nice. This is actually our March is our wine trail month. So every weekend we're open for the tour, and we get I think last week we had about maybe 400 or 500 people come through our doors.
Wow.
Yeah, that, which is, you know, it's nice for us and good for business.
Yeah,
and,
really.
And most of them are new, so you know they've never been to our winery before, so they you know get a chance to try our wines, and often they'll come back and become regular customers. So it actually is very nice. I would recommend any winery to be on a wine trail if they can, because it really helps out in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. That's a lot of people. That's a good deal, though.
I mean it's a lot of work, as you might guess, and you know my staff are not crazy about it. But you know what are you going to do?
You have to suck it up. That's what pays the bills.
That's basically what I just give them, let them take a few extra bottles of wine home every so often.
There you go. That'll make them happy.
Yeah.
Well, Salvatore, thank you for joining us. I want you, before we get off, though, to tell us all the contact information for Clary Winery, where you are, your phone number, your address, your email, your Facebook, your tweet, your everything, all the stuff that, in case anyone wants to get a hold of you or if they're in the area, to visit you.
Okay, great. Well, I guess the easiest thing would be to visit our website, which is, it's C-U-L-L-A-R-I, ClaryVineyards.com, vineyards with an S, since we have two vineyards. And that pretty much will give the reader or the person all the information they need. Our store number is area code 717-533-8985. And, again, they could call and for directions or the times that we're open. We are on Facebook, so if they want to follow us on Facebook, they can just do a search for Clary Vineyards, and we regularly post on there. And, you know, they can just Google us. If they just Google Clary Vineyards on Google, they'll get all information they need. Since we are in Hershey, we have a chocolate wine, which is actually our best-selling wine, that I just started making about a year ago, and it just quickly rose to the top. So they can probably Google chocolate wine. They'll find us as well.
I was going to ask you about that. Coco Nostra.
Yeah. It was kind of a joke to begin with. Like I said, it kind of it zoomed to the top of our bestseller list and still there. And actually, the state stores are selling it now. So, which is I guess it's a plus for us.
Yeah, it is.
But it's a fun wine. It tastes like chocolate. It's actually, well, talking about Zin, it actually has a Zin red wine Zin base to it, and then I add some chocolate extracts. Not Hershey though. We're not affiliated with Hershey Foods or Hershey chocolate. Although the Hotel Hershey does use it. They use our chocolate wine, but we're not affiliated with them at all.
That sounds interesting. If I'm ever up in that area, and I have a brother-in-law that lives right outside of Baltimore, next time I visit him, I'll make the short drive up and stop by and visit with you.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. Yeah, well, we actually get a lot of people from Baltimore that are. We're only about an hour and a half away from Baltimore, so that would be great.
Yeah, sounds fun. Salvatore, thank you so much for being on the program tonight. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
And the best of luck to you and to the winery.
All right. Well, thank you, Ron, and take care, and good luck down there in Florida.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Bye now. All right. That was fun. Now we have our second guest on tonight, and I don't have his – Mike, do you have his credentials in front of you?
That was that long list that you sent me.
That long list. Highlight it. I don't have it in front of me. It'd take me a couple minutes to pull it up, and I don't want to spend the time since you have it.
Yes.
Just jump to and highlight a few things about our next guest there.
Wow. Well, let me bring him on because I think he's on hold. I hate to Okay. Keep him on there when he's on there. But let's see. Hold on just a second. All right, Alex. Alex is with us.
I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Wow.
Alex from Wooden Angel Restaurant.
The proprietor, Wooden Angel Restaurant, Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, Wine Advisory Committee, Medical Center Foundation, 1984 to 2006, board chair for 18 years, member 2011 to the present, founder of the TMC Wine Event, 1986-2012, friend fundraiser for the hospital, 30 wineries plus 25 restaurants. Wow. I mean, it just there's a list here that just it's amazing how much goes on here. Board of Directors, Pennsylvania Restaurant Association, 75 to 82. What else you have? And the restaurant itself, one of the greatest wine lists in the world from Wine Spectator of 1980 to 1986. The Grand Award, the only Pennsylvania restaurant ever to receive the award from Wine Spectator from 86 to 97. Oh, my gosh, it's just, yeah, I was looking at that earlier. I was like, oh, wow, there's pages.
And one of the main things on there that I really am glad that he's joining us tonight is he has been a judge and continues to be a judge, not full time, for wine competitions around the country. And this is something, Alex, I'm going to start with that. I'm going to start with you being a judge. What does a judge look for? What is your duties? Tell us about being a wine judge.
Well, it's fun. It's work.
Yeah, you drink wine.
Well, you don't dare swallow.
Yeah. Oh,
if you
yeah.
swallow, you're finished. You can't do it. You spit. Swift swirl, spit, and that's it. And in fact, I just came back from Rochester, New York on Monday, where we had 3,200 wines in the competition from 14 countries and 50 states.
Wow.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's the second year that we've had that many. I've been doing this for about 6 or 7 years. And then what we look for, you smell. It's mostly you have 6 or 8 glasses in front of you. You smell them. And then you line them up good to bad, or first place to the last place. And then you spit them in your mouth, you swish them around, you spit it out, and you write your report, which takes about 3 minutes of wine. And then you give it a grade, or a judge, or a medal, whatever you want to say. And then the panel you're on, you discuss it, and you go to the next flight. And you do that for 2 or 3 days. And after you're done, for lunch and dinner, you drink a lot of beer. Beer is the palate cleanser.
That's good. What do you? Okay, obviously you didn't try all the wines.
No. We were 60 of us, and we divided them out among all of us.
So you don't have a specialty or anything?
Well, I judged the California State Fair. This year will be my 25th year. I'm in the sparkling wine panel, and Pinot Noir panel, and dessert panel.
Ah. So you take care of those, and there's other people that are more into the other types and the things like that. Okay, so.
Well, the reason I picked those is because they're my favorite wines, number one. Number two, there are not that many of them. Like in Chardonnays, there might be 200 or 300 Chardonnays. So if you go through 100 Chardonnays a day, you're really fatigued. Your mouth is sour. If you do Cabernets, your mouth is lined with tannic acid, and you don't want to do it anymore. So with the ones I selected, and luckily I've been doing it long enough, I got my choices, they're not as fatiguing.
Ah. So... Well, that obviously brings to mind, though, how can the judging by the third day, how can this be fair if there's so many wines?
Because it's divided up, and you're used to it. Everybody that I judge with, we've done it for years. I've done it for over 30 years. And also, a lot of competitions now are testing the judges. In California... and then the Finger Lakes and so forth, you might have two wines of the same wine in a flight.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't score them within 2 points of each other, you're not asked to come back. Because then you're guessing. And also sometimes they'll bring a wine out in the morning and the same wine in the afternoon, and they want to see if you're fatigued in the afternoon and if you don't score it the same. So we're constantly tested. In California, the first evening we have a seminar, and it's a fascinating seminar. It's put on by University of California, Davis. And even though I've been doing it a long time, I learn something every seminar.
In the seminar, they talk about wines then?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Not particularly to judging, but wines.
Yeah, I'm talking about wine and the trends in wine and what's happening and what to look for. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. You have been a judge for many years, I saw on your resume there. What got you started into judging?
Well, I grew up with my grandfather's house, who made Zinfandel, real Zinfandel, for years. And when I was very small, I started tasting wine. I tasted wine all through my high school and college. Had a place in my heart, of course. And then when I opened the Wooden Angel up in 1968, we had a United Nations wine list, but it was so confusing teaching the staff about all the different wines of the world. Two or three years later, I dropped all the imports and only kept the Americans. Oh. And the Americans' wines, of course, were from all over, and they're just wonderful. And they kept on growing and growing. Before I knew it, I had 500 wines in the wine cellar. And by visiting the wineries and so forth, I really sharpened my palate, and I started with the American Wine Society and different groups, the Society for Society of Wine Educators, which I was on the board for a number of years, and this is those two got me started in the judging part, and then I took a test one day, and I passed the test with flying colors, and I was a certified judge.
What does the test consist of?
You get a control sample, and then you have 12 doctored up wines, and you had to tell what the difference was.
Oh.
High acid, low acid, high sugar, low sugar, and all the other things that go into wine and spoiled wines. And then you were given four wines, one, two, three, four, and they were brought, or A, B, C, D, and they were brought back after 15 minutes. You had 15 minutes to taste them. They brought them back again in different order, and you had to match up the order of your first your notes. And uh-huh. then they brought them back again and again. So if you screwed up once, you're really in trouble. It was quite challenging. It was an all-afternoon event.
Wow.
Put on by the University of California, Davis.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. I've heard about judging. I mean, you hear about it all the time, and everybody knows about it, and everybody asks all wineries all the time if they have awards, and wineries love to brag about their awards, but I've never had an opportunity to talk to a judge. This is really fascinating here. I never realized what they went through to do the judging and what it took to be able to do that. So this is interesting. You mentioned your cellar grew to 500 bottles. Now it's rated as one of the biggest in the country.
Well, we're downsizing now.
Oh, are you?
We're down to about 400, and we're going to go down a little lower. It's just not, if you were my boss, you'd have fired me a long time ago. And the ROI is just not there. But it's an ego trip. It's advertising. It's prestigious, and it's fun, and I get to taste a lot of wine.
Oh, yes. So what do you still stay with primarily United States wines?
Yeah, I only have I only sell American wine.
Yeah. And from everywhere? Are you partial
to California? Well, it would be nice. Being in Pennsylvania, a control state, we're kind of restricted on some of the wines. And that's why I'm on an advisory panel now, because we're changing a lot of things in Pennsylvania. We're going from a control state to a modern control state. Today, the Senate in Pennsylvania passed a bill that would allow citizens to bring in so many bottles of wine a year from wineries directly shipped to them. Two cases a month.
I open
the modernization thing.
I open the program with that. With the bill I was talking about it, and it's two cases a year. What they're talking are two cases a month is what they're talking about, but they're saying it has to pass the House, which may be a problem.
Right, it's going to be a problem. They're, those guys, I talk to them all the time. In fact, I had them all over for lunch a few months ago, and geez, unbelievable. But they have so many things they have to know, and it I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, but you know, I think Pennsylvania is one of the few states that still has the so much control on state stores like that.
Right. But we're the new state stores, you go in and you think you're in a California wine shop. We're redecorating them, revising them. We're making kind of all kind of changes. We have more better selection in a normal Pennsylvania state store of wine and liquor than most liquor stores across the country. And if we don't have it, we can get it for you in a week. And well, except for the rare wines, of course. And
right.
We don't have old wines. Our wines are all newer wines.
But
we're really
stores,
making progress. I'm really proud of them.
Most stores won't have that. Well, the state stores, what is that from after Prohibition? Is that just a tie over from after Prohibition?
Yes, yes. Been there forever, it seems like. Yeah. Before, when you went to a state store, when I first opened up the restaurant years ago, you went to a metal counter and you told the guy what you wanted, and he went in the back and brought it out to you. There was no wines on display, and he couldn't advise you of any wine or any product. It wasn't legal for him to say anything about the product. We've come a long, 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 long way.
It
and our prices, everybody says Pennsylvania prices are high. They're competitive.
I've had some people in the my winery down here over the last couple of weeks since I've been talking about Pennsylvania, and when I find out they're from Pennsylvania, I start questioning them. And the state store is not something that everyone's thrilled about, but they do say that it is competitive in their price. They just want the opportunity to have it shipped to them, and it looks like that might happen. So
it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yes. I guarantee it's going to happen.
Your restaurant. Why? What was the beginning of that? Tell us a little bit about the restaurant itself.
Oh, okay. Well, in 1948, when my father came back from the war, he built a cement block building, and he called it Bert's, B-E-R-T-S, which was his first name, and it was a sandwich restaurant that was just instantly successful. And no alcohol, and he had that restaurant, and it grew in products and from 1948 to 1958. When the highway came through in front of him and pushed him out, he moved a mile up the road to where we are now, and in a newer building, and it's still today Bert's Barbecue, but we've changed the name to Bert's Wooden Indian, a family restaurant, and it has about 125 seats. And then when I came back from my stint in the Navy, my dad, I was working with him, and one day he surprised me and said, we bought a liquor license. He's always wanted to have a bar. He loved the bar business. So we went outside, and we said, okay, we're going to have it this, this, and this. We paced it off. We called in a cousin with a backhoe. We called in another cousin who's a cement mason. He poured the footer, and other cousins were bricklayers. They put the block walls up, and then we built it ourselves over a year and a half, and we went to open it, and we didn't have a name, and we knew what we wanted. We wanted a fine dining restaurant with a full-service bar and good wines, and we didn't have a name, and my mother said, well, look, the wooden Bert's has a wooden Indian, a real hand-carved antique wooden Indian, life-size. Let's call it the Wooden Indian, and we'll call this the Wooden Angel, which is completely opposite of what it is. It's a massive, big beams, high ceiling, cathedral ceiling, all brick inside, plaid rug, and we'll call it the Wooden Angel and with this angel on the wall. I said, fine, Mom, good idea. And from there, we grew and grew and grew, and we're still in business 45 years later, which is very rare for a restaurant.
Yes,
Wooden
it
Indian is 65 years old, which is rare for really rare for a restaurant. With the same family ownership, same menu, same everything.
Wow, that's great. What do you have a cellar that you built for the wine while you were doing everything?
Well, we built a cellar originally in front of the restaurant when we built it, and we outgrew it the first day. And then we built another addition on the back, which is called the wine cellar, which is a room to have parties. And we put a room in there that's with iron gates and the whole thing, really, really neat. And when we outgrew that, we put another addition on the back that holds only red wines, and then the wine cellar we had before refrigerated only white wines. Well, when we started downsizing, we took the refrigerated wine cellar with the arch ceiling and so forth and made it part of the private dining room wine cellar. And we keep all our wine now in the long red wine cellar. And in there we have wines. We have BVs in 73, 74, and 75. We have 15, 20 vintages of Ridge Montebello back as far as 68.
Wow.
We have 15 or 20 vintages of Diamond Creek, all three vineyards, back now to just 81. We used to go back to the early 70s. So we have a lot of depth. We have Buku Magnums and 3 liters, and we serve a lot of wine by the glass. And our secret to wine by the glass is when somebody orders a glass of wine, we take the bottle to the table, show them the label, pour them a taste. If they like it, we pour them 6 ounces, and we charge 1/4 of a bottle price. We don't order a glass. And then that list of wines usually changes every 10 days or so. We keep on adding. And so there's always something new in the Wine by the Glass program.
That's a great way to do it, too. That's a fantastic way to do it. You mentioned California wines. You say you just stay with the United States. Do you have a representation of all states, or do you just California?
I'd love to. We have Washington, Oregon, California, New Mexico, New York, Pennsylvania. We did have Virginia. We were out of those. We had a Tabor Hill from one of the ones from Michigan, from Papa, St. Julian. And every so often we get wines from other states, but it's something that the wineries are afraid to sell to Pennsylvania because they can't believe, they thought it's impossible, and it's really, really easy. Since I've been on the advisory panel, we figured a nice way, easy way, for a winery once they get in Pennsylvania, and we have a packet we send them and how they can get in. And we're trying to be winery friendly.
And it needs to be. I mean, you know, it's part of the country now. If you're not, you're going to lose out. And I've always said I would love to be able to stand in front of each state legislature while they're in session, just for just 1 minute, and say, ladies and gentlemen, the wine industry is a multi-billion-dollar business in this country. Your state is hurting for money just like everybody else. You can either be part of that multi-billion-dollar business or you can fight it. It's your choice. Thank you. And,
well, I'll go with you.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's as simple as that. And, you know, but so many states, we've been doing this program now for 3 years. We've talked to, alphabetically, we're in Pennsylvania. And it's amazing how the state legislatures are fighting wineries and fighting shipping and fighting all that stuff. And, well, in 1161, H.R. 1161, I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. Last year, it was a devastating bill that was before the House of Representatives, federal House, and it's sort of dormant now. But things like that, it's just, I don't know, I get on a soapbox every once in a while with that stuff, and it's just because it's so ridiculous how they are constantly.
Let me tell you what's really going on. The wholesale distributors in control states have so much power.
Oh, yes.
And they protect their turf. And they lobby unbelievably, and they spend a lot of money on lobbying. They sell stuff to the state without even seeing it. It doesn't even go through their hands. So they love it. if they have, if the state went open, that means they'd have to go from selling to one person in the state to stores along the street, and
right.
they don't have the staff, and they don't want it. They're making too much money now, so they're the biggest lobby against going open. And I'll say that to their face.
And well, it's a fact. I've just the Southern Distributors, which is enormous in South,
enormous.
Southern, you know, it's probably the one of the biggest ones in the country, and they're the president and his two sons. I had an opportunity to meet him a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we the friend of mine who is has a winery in Southern Florida knew him, and it was like they want to stop everybody from everything because they want the control of everything. And it's just, I don't know. I can get on the soapbox about this stuff and all that, but it's going to take legislatures to stand up to it. And it's happening slowly but surely, but it's happening.
They're against the direct shipment because they're going to lose a couple cases.
Exactly. And that's, you know, and that's money in their pocket. But, you know, the small wineries can't afford to go through distributors, and this is something that, you know, if we went through distributors, we have our own distributor's license. This is why I met them, trying to, you know, mm-hmm. they tried to take it away from us and we were grandfathered in. But small wineries try to go through distributors, and if it doesn't sell at their time frame, not ours, at their time frame, they discount it and we lose money on it. So,
I know. I if you look at my bio, I've been involved in 3 wineries in my lifetime.
So you understand what it's all about, you know?
It's unbelievable.
It is. It's unbelievable. No, I get on
it. It's a glamorous business, but it's like the restaurant business and one of the toughest businesses in the world.
Yeah. there's that old saying, you know how to make a small fortune in a winery? Start with a large fortune.
I lost mine.
Most of us have. I noticed you have your past. You mentioned wineries. A lot of Oregon here. Are you spend time in Oregon, or what is that?
Well, when I in my early judging days, there was a young lady from Oregon who seemed to. We always ended up together talking and judging, and I visited her in the 70s, maybe early 80s. And she lived in Newburgh,
uh-huh.
and her husband wanted to get in the wine business. And every time I'd go, he'd pull out these charts and graphs of heat and soil and sunshine and all this. And listening to him, he finally bought some vineyards on Ribbon Ridge, which was the first vineyard on Ribbon Ridge, and we called it Ridgecrest.
Uh-huh.
And it was very, very, very successful. And by being in that operation, I got to meet everybody in the California, in the Oregon wine industry, and David Lett being the dean of that. And they came here to the restaurant every year, and we put on a wine event for them. And then eventually we bought a winery. We bought Veritas Winery, and we leased it to our two partners, our senior partners, and it's called Shehalem now. And And they're making wonderful wine. In fact, I was there in August, and we had 25 vintages of Pinot Noir from Ridgecrest Winery out of Magnums.
Wow.
And the sit-down, unbelievable how good they were. In fact, every one of them was a great vintage. I took a 2000 Magnum to the Finger Lakes judging last weekend, and I blind-tasted all my friends there, and they couldn't believe how wonderful a 2000 Pinot Noir from Oregon was. We had 25 years, and it was Oregon I wanted to live there and so forth. But when we started the winery, we had 12 of us, and we started the vineyards. We had 12 of us, and we bought the winery 12. It was tough running all this with 12 people, so two of them bought 10 of us out, and they're highly successful today.
Oregon and Pinot Noir go hand in hand. I mean, it's just.
And Pinot Gris and Chardonnay,
yeah,
and Riesling, yeah.
The
Gunnar Veltner now,
yeah, Gunnar Veltner is picking up. We've talked to A lot of, and what amazes me about Oregon Pinots is that there's so many different clones of it. I never realized until we started to talk to them up there, and they were talking about all the different clones of the Pinot. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. You know, so
found that Jean is the best for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to your resume here, too, you've addressed numerous different organizations and groups all around the country. Your specialty being restaurants, I noticed more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a degree in restaurant management and all that, or is it just...
I went to Michigan State my freshman, sophomore, and half my junior year. And one day the dean of students came and knocked on my door and said, son, it's time for you to take a break. I said, yes, sir, we'll take a little break. And I was in the Naval Reserve at Michigan State, and so off I went. And before I knew it, I was in the Gulf of Tonkin for a year, and then came home for Christmas, went back for another year in the Gulf of Tonkin. And then I came home after that two-year stint, and I went back to Michigan State. But I didn't stay very long. My heart wasn't in it, and I wanted to get busy with a life. And so I left there my early senior year, I think, and came back and started working with my dad. So I have no degree, but I never had anyone because I never went up for a job. For my dad.
Well, you've been involved with the restaurant business for many years, though, and so, you know, it's... It's probably better than a degree anyway.
You betcha.
Mike, do you have any questions for Alex here?
No, I've been looking at their website. The dining area I'm looking at, the photos, it looks very elegant there. And I was also looking at the other site that you have on there, Burt's Wooden Indian, that you were talking about earlier. And it's a great setting, and the prices are very good. So I don't know. I might have to next time he goes up to was it Maryland? You have
Maryland? Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to hitch a ride or something. Go to the place.
Where
or
the beef? It looks
15 really minutes good. From the airport, so we're real
wow.
Handy. Mm-hmm.
Where is Beaver located?
Halfway between Pittsburgh and Youngstown.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
Half hour from Pittsburgh and half hour from Youngstown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, fascinating. I absolutely fascinating. So you're cutting back on the wines at the restaurant. What is your ultimate goal then?
My ultimate goal is to have about 100 wines and rotate them and change them quite often. That way, the customer always has something new to look forward to, and I don't have $1 million sitting down there, investment. And so, what I tell everybody when I do my talks and my motivational things on wine, I tell everybody, don't buy wine for your wine cellar. You're just wasting your money, because tomorrow the wines are going to be better. And they might not be any less price because of the price of doing business. But the wine's going to be better. And you can say, well, great old wines age well. I said, yes, but the technology today and the way you're making your wines are so good now, they're going to get a little bit better. But don't tie your money up. Keep on trying new ones. And never buy the same wine twice. Always look for something new and different. And don't and respect my wishes of A, B, C. Anything but Cabernet. Anything but Chardonnay.
Anything but Cab or Chardonnay. Yeah.
I tried all the... I couldn't believe how many different grape varieties we went through. I have it on the screen here. There's so many of them. And it used to be on wine judgings, you spent all day on Rieslings, but there's so many wonderful grape varieties that are being developed at Davis and in Cornell and so forth.
Yeah, Michigan, you know, University
Michigan,
of Michigan.
Too, Michigan State, they're doing a lot of things with grapes, yes. There's, and the blends, we were always purists. We always wanted Cabernet, and, oh, we don't want anything in it. you do want something in it. We always wanted a vintage wine. You don't need a vintage wine. European didn't have vintage wines until they started selling to America. Americans have to learn to drink blends and drink non-vintage wine and drink jug wines.
Yeah.
And drink wine. There's so many great things out there that aren't expensive. You don't have to spend more than $15 or $20 in a wine shop for a good bottle, the better bottle of wine. And the better the blend, or the more the blending, the more challenging it is for the winemaker and for the consumer.
And my thoughts exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. I teach a class two or three times a month, and that's one of the things I tell them. You know, don't get stuck on just one wine you drink all the time. There are so many out there, and you'll never know if you like them or not unless you pick up a different bottle. So,
don't be afraid of Native American or hybrids.
Yeah, there's all sorts of wonderful grapes out there. I mean, wonderful wines. Like I said, we've talked to so many wineries up to this point in the program, and it's just some of the wines that or some of the wineries we've talked to, and some of the wines that they come out with just sound phenomenal. It's really exciting what we're doing in this country with wine.
Here's a wine I'm just looking at. It has Brumatillo, Trebbiano, Pinot Grigio, Moscato, Vidello, and Viognier blend in one wine. It's called Cabana White. I mean, it got a gold medal, and then I don't remember if I tasted it. I haven't got my results back, but there's a lot of things going into the bottle.
There are. I'm finding blends all over the country too, and some beautiful blends all over the country. And you're right. The you know, when people give a chance to these other wines, they're finding out that there are a lot of great wines out there.
My favorite wine that I remember judging was a iced Cabernet Franc.
Really?
From the Niagara Peninsula. I'll tell you, it was out of this world. An ice wine from Cabernet Franc.
I saw one for Cabernet Sauvignon. I've never seen one for a Cabernet Franc. What? Tell me about it. I'm always curious what they're doing with the what. I mean, you expect a dry, acidic wine coming from the Cabernet Franc. I love a Cabernet Franc. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a beautiful grape, and I love the wine. But when they sweeten it, what does it taste like?
Well, it was left in the vine. It's a natural ice wine. It's from, I found it, Atlantis Niagara Wine Company in Ontario, 2010 Cabernet Franc Red Ice. It was sweet, but it was delicious, full-flavored, had enough acid to carry it through, and I'm going to go try to find some.
What's the aroma?
I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't a red aroma. It was more of a dessert aroma.
Uh-huh. that should be interesting. Always been a little leery of the iced reds, and so it's good to know that they are. Well, if they do well with them, they're something I'm going to have to try.
And here's another one. I got double gold, a Muscadine from Apple Barn Winery in Tennessee.
Huh.
There's any Florida wines on here. A lot of double golds. Lots of double golds. And, a winery doesn't want a bronze. And I always tell my fellow judges in the panel, don't get bronze. Don't waste. Move it up. Move it up. If it's good, move it up.
Yeah.
Or don't waste on a bronze. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. We never have entered competitions. This is when we open up the winery, we decide not to enter competitions, simply because, cost, shipping, number of bottles you have to submit, all that stuff. So we just decided not to enter competition, and we never have. I've had people who have came in and judges come in and taste some my wine, particularly the port, and they tell me that the port would probably win a gold at the Florida State Fair, which a judge from there said it probably would, which I was quite impressed with. But It's fun to hear and talk to you about being a judge and what all you go through and stuff like that. That's really quite interesting.
It's fun. In fact, I'm doing an article for a magazine on a day in the life of a wine judge.
Oh, really?
It's going to be published. It was called Pittsburgh Quarterly, and it's going to be out this spring. And I have to have it done by tomorrow.
And are you almost done?
No, I'll procrastinate.
Well, you still got a few hours to go before it's morning.
Yep.
Well, Alex, thank you very much for your time taking with us tonight. It was really, really enjoyable. I do have to point out, too, that the reason Alex was invited onto the program is because we had a lady who, excuse me, we had a lady who was listening to our program on archives, and she emailed me and suggested that maybe it might be a possibility to get Alex on because he is quite knowledgeable, and I'm glad I listened to her. Her name was Maura Donnelly, and she works right up around there, and she's been to the restaurant many times and all that. So
she worked here in college.
Oh, did she?
Yes. Yep. Her, yeah. She has a sister and two brothers. All four of them worked here.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. So that's great. So I will send her a thank you email for this. But it was great having you on the program. If you would like to give us information about the restaurant, phone number, address, all that stuff, in case anyone would in that area like to visit you, we would love to have you pass it on to them, including, you know, Facebook page or website and all that stuff.
Well, it's the Wooden Angel Restaurant. It's in Beaver, Pennsylvania, just past the Pittsburgh Airport. The phone number is 724-774-7880. And the website is wooden-angel.com. And someday you all get to Pittsburgh, and I'll be waiting for you.
We will look forward to it. I'd love to do that. There's a lot of stuff up in that area we need to see, and we're going to have to add you to our list now.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time, Alex, and best of luck to you. And now go in the other room and write that article.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Night. Night now. I threw you in the. There you go. Thank you. I threw you into the green room there. Hit the wrong button. Are you with me, Mike? No, you're not. I can't hear you. If you can hear me, I can't hear you. So Mike is floating out there somewhere. He's let's see. He's on hold. He's back on off of hold. I don't know where he is. Mike, come and join me if you can hear me. You can come back on the program. If not, then I will just go ahead and talk about a couple of things here. We got guests next week. We got a couple of guests next week. They've already signed up. I will confirm, obviously, so we won't lose them completely. But we have next week is going to be April the 5th, and we have Todd from Brower Valley Vineyards is going to be joining us, and Paul from the vineyards at Hershey will be on with us. They both this week were at the wine show up in that part of the country up in Pennsylvania and all that. So they're going to be joining us and next week. And so be sure to tune in and listen to the show next week. You can get in touch with us here at All About Wine, just like Maura did. Maura got in touch with me after listening to the archives and made a suggestion. We love the suggestions like that, and Alex was a great guest. I have been in the wine business for many, many, many years, and I've never talked to a judge and found out what they went through to become a judge. I thought that
was
fascinating.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, you're back.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
That was weird. Well, I had to disconnect and call in again.
Yeah, I saw that. So I figured you'd take care of business there. So I went ahead and talked.
So yeah.
So it's the first time I've ever had an opportunity to talk to a wine judge, and that was really, really fascinating. So,
mm-hmm.
But I was saying, anyone out there, if you want to tune in to us and listen, or if you want to send us an email or get on the Facebook page even, or any of that stuff, and if you have suggestions for guests, we would love to hear it. Maura did that when she was listening to mm-hmm. the archives. And that's how we get Alex on. So
you make a suggestion, and we take it and run with it. If it fits the show, why not? Yeah, that was a good suggestion. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah,
there was one thing I was going to ask from Salvatore. On his website, he mentions a closure for bottles called a Zork.
Zork's been around for a while.
Okay, because there was the something. They mentioned they were testing it on a few of their wines, including the Coco Nostra one and a few of the other ones, but I was thinking, I don't know if that's something that I heard of before and I just forgot, or what is a Zork?
Zork is like a plastic cork.
Okay. So it looks like it, but it's not a...
Yeah, but it's not.
Okay.
Zork's been around for a long time. In fact, I looked at using a Zork 4 or 5 years ago. We looked at using a Zork and it just a little bit, it didn't work for us. Actually, we're using hand corking, and the Zork wasn't working right for the hand corking, so we quit using it. And we had to take a little piece of cork and drop it in our corker every time we popped the cork in with the Zork, and oh man, it was a nightmare. So.
Uh-huh.
So we stopped it, but yeah, the Zork has been around for a while. It's
okay.
It's a good closure. It's most people drink wine so fast anyway.
Yeah,
you can close them with anything, and the Zork works. So,
okay. Let's see what else, Jan. You also have a wine fest this Saturday.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm going to try and play this. it sounds like on the replay, and we'll be back in 1 minute. So stay tuned with this is information on Winefest this Saturday, which is March 31st. Hold on.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Winefest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Winefest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at Winefest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at Wine Fest.
Oh.
Yeah.
When I heard the beginning of it, that's the first thing I thought of. Was
me
like
too.
some band with a big guitar, you know, playing
in a
big Mexican restaurant or something. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
All right, it's time to change that one.
Yeah. No, we do not have Spanish musicians.
yeah, that was. I just realized that when I heard that come on there, I was like, "Oh my gosh, is this what I'm listening to?" I didn't realize that until just now. So, okay. So are we're good until let's see next
week. Well, while you were on hiatus there for a couple minutes,
you said two guests. Yeah,
I talked about the two guests and all that.
Yeah.
Who's going to be on? I'll confirm them this week, but it should be no problem getting them on. So we have a couple of guests for next week,
April the fifth.
Yeah, we're already baseball season starting for all of you baseball fans out there.
Yes, it is.
Hockey season's almost over. It's only like a couple of weeks for that before they get into their second season of playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we were just talking. When we were talking to Salvatore, I went and checked the weather in Hershey just to see how bad it's warming up, and it was 52 degrees when I called or when I checked, and tonight's low is supposed to be 32.
Whoa!
So,
he said it was going to cool down though.
That's cool.
He said it's going to start cooling down. He said for a couple of weeks now they're predicting cooler weather.
Yeah, that was amazing. I didn't think it was still getting cold up there like that. But 50, let's see, rain tomorrow, Saturday, high of 50 and a low of 36. And then it gets back into the 70s on Sunday with a low of 48. That's yeah. Amazing. I didn't think it was still getting.
Well, you said they had frost a couple of days ago.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, and that's what's so bad about this warm weather they're having all across the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, up in the Dakotas, they're getting 70 degree weather up there. And
wow.
You know the frost isn't done up there. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. It's a problem.
Okay. So I guess we'll see you all next Thursday. And
Thursday.
Okay. Well, see now the ending has the same music from. Okay, let's call the band back in with the big guitars and the trumpets and everything.
Okay. Band. Come on back in.
Yeah. Here we go. All right. And one, two, three.
Hit it.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay.
Thank you all very much for listening tonight. We appreciate it. Or whenever you listen.
There we go.
There we go.
The sweaty bus people are ready to go.
I bet they are.
They've been standing outside in the lawn with the mosquitoes all the past few hours. Okay. So we're gone.